looking at food security and whether or not this could be the way forward when it comes to exiting the middle income trap that Malaysia has been afflicted with decades long. Joining us on the line is Datuk Dr. Rais Hussein, the President and CEO of Emmy Research. Dr. Rais, we've done some extensive conversation in terms of food security, but the latest research that Emmy Research has produced is actually quite extensive. Maybe you can walk through us in terms of where we are at right now when it comes to food security, particularly when it comes to the role of food security in exiting or using it as an exit of from the middle income trap. Dr. Rais.
I think 4 or 5 days to Hari Raya, we are talking about a very important topic that is going to be even more important for months, days, years to come, food security. We know that the recent GFSI, Global Food Security Index, have shown that Malaysia has unfortunately going down the slippery slope in terms of food security. And we've seen in terms of the indicators with regards to sufficiency of supply, they have labeled us very weak.
Let's pull in some graphics. I have here a slide that is produced by Emmy Research. It shows effective national food security strategy leads into greater food availability and lower food expenditure. Maybe you can talk to us with this graphic.
When you talk about the crucial role of food security, obviously the three elements, effective national food security strategy, greater food availability and affordability, which becomes the basis of GFSI, lower food expenditure as a share of the overall household spending. If you look at what will be the impact, you see on the six items. But this is the most important part, the snapshot of Malaysian profile in GFSI. If you look at the sufficiency of the supply, we have experienced the biggest plunge at 48.1 points. And zero score for the dependency on chronic food aid. I think this is the three red areas that you can see. It's a very important area that we need to be focusing on. Obviously, a plunge of 48.9% is never a good story to tell. And then we also have an issue of the water, where we have a serious issue. It has been marked red. And also the political commitment to adaptation at 24.6. So some of them might dispute and discuss and debate on the findings of GFSI, but sufficient to say that the whatever findings of the GFSI closely resembles what is the ground reality when it comes to the food security element in Malaysia. So this is let's take just two examples. Yeah? You talk about rice, which is a staple food, and we have never achieved the targeted 70% self-sufficiency. And it is now bordering around 61-63%. Even then, the statistic that is available, some suggest that some portion of it is actually smuggled out of Thailand. So we are serious issues. The second issue that we like to point out is the recent chicken and egg story. Unfortunately, although we are self-sufficient, 107% or more, for chicken, but we still had that interim period of shortages with regards to the way it was managed. I think the policies were not very comprehensive. We were targeting and doing introducing policy that is not supportive of to ensure the food security in the area of chicken. For instance, we are not focusing on the supply side of the chicken issue, which is the chicken feed, which the price went up by 70-80%. And we largely import it from Argentina, Brazil, and Thailand. And on top of that, there's an increase in freight charges by 4%. So this really hit hard the poultry industry. So this is, we need to have a consistent, a coherent, and congruent policy to ensure that we will be able to address the food security issues.
Let's look at the National Agro-Food Policy, or the NAP 2.0, in this particular graphic that we can show you right now. It shows the net food import of 30 to 35 billion. It provides no internal and external shocks. However, this might not necessarily be good moving forward when it comes to the next 10 years, heading towards 2030. Doctor, maybe you can share with us the ideas on this particular graphics.
This is a very important statistics that we need to really, really understand. If you look at the growth, it has been exponential in terms of food import, unfortunately. We are probably reaching about 75 to 85 billion in the year 2022. To get the statistics and data is not easy, unfortunately, in the context of Malaysia. But be that as may, we look at the growing exponentially. So we are becoming too dependent and reliant on imports to fulfill local demand. Sometimes we talk about local demand in context of just 33 million Malaysian population, but forget not that we have a sizable foreign workers in Malaysia, which is in the range between 5 to 7 million people. So we need to address a 40 million market. So while on one end, the population is growing, both the Malaysians and the non-Malaysians, but our production has not been growing accordingly. And henceforth, we need to import. And this is largely, although we have, we never want of agro-food policies and national agro-food policy again in 2.0, but the issue and real challenge is that the execution of those policies that has to have the desired impact.
Right. We need to talk about the policy shift on, say, for instance, cash crops versus food crop. One area to look at is whether or not industrial plantations is heading in the wrong direction. What's your thoughts on this?
The other big challenge that we have identified very clearly, I think this has been also identified by the decision makers and policy makers, is that the issue of the cash crop versus the food crop. Obviously, we have seen that our arable land is defined as the land that used for agro-food, has been continuously on a huge decline. We are hitting about 2.5% according to the FAO statistics. That is one of the lowest in the world. For comparison's sake, Bangladesh has about 22% arable land. So there's a big issue here. However, my MA research view is very simple. You can continue with the cash crop front, but do not sacrifice the food. This is very important. And nowadays, with the advent of the technologies, agri-tech, fertigation system, and many other technology that can be used, incorporating the 4R into agri, we don't really need a lot of land. Yeah, and so many countries like Netherlands, who is the second largest exporter of food in the world behind the United States, they have a very small land, not much big land. And what they're doing right, they are employing the 4IR effectively. Look at the arable land as percent of total land area. We are on the decline and other countries are on the increase. So we really, really need to reassess and recalibrate our agri-food policies to ensure that there will be right amount of land be allocated for the food, agro for food.
All right. Like you mentioned in this particular research that you did, the industrial plantations appeared in the early 1900s. However, the development of new plantations on previously forested land are replacing those of old rubber plantations. And this has created an account where industrial tree crops in Malaysia by 1990 and by 2010 is basically oil palm plantations. And this covers 20% of Peninsular Malaysia, if you look at that particular graph. But one area that I want to look at is on policy weaknesses, or perhaps opportunities to grow our strength in terms of policy. It looks like the SSR for most of the food categories are actually not really, really good, anywhere from vegetables to particularly when it comes to fish. It doesn't provide a promising story here, Doctor. Am I right?
Yes, there are some areas that we have done well. If you look at some of the fruits, for instance, pineapple, banana, guava, and so on, we are doing well. Chicken, we are doing well. The only issue here is that the other side of the coin, let's look at chili, for instance. Chili, a very relatively easy vegetable to plant. We are only self-sufficient. Our self-sufficient ratio here is just 29.3, about 30%. We are importing 70% of it. Why is this happening? So I think, can we address that issue? Yes, we can. Do we have the resources? Yes, we do. Do we have the land? Yes, we have. Do we have the technology? Yes, we have. Do you have the people to do it? Yes, we need to excite the young to come into this area of business. So I think there are some mismatch in terms of policies. There are some issues that has to be addressed. And the good news is, it can be addressed. It's not that it cannot be addressed. With a little bit of political will, a little bit of right and concrete policies way forward, we will be able to address these issues in a more medium to long-term basis. I think we've so far taken so many short-term policies, short-term strategy, which is not going to help us. Again, look at the back of the possible geopolitical issues that has a big impact in our food security. Russia, Ukraine, for instance, will affect our fertilizers, for instance. We will have a huge shortage of fertilizers. And on top of that, the price will balloon. And what happens? It's a double whammy. And anytime this thing happens, the impact of the food, what we call harvest, will be delayed by almost anything between 8 months to 12 months. So this will create a shortages in the market as well. So there are many issues. And we need to be vigilant against these geopolitical, regional shocks that we may come in our way, not forgetting the currency issues and so on. I think it is high time that food security is to be made as a national security agenda and to be accorded a national security status, so that everything relating to food security will have the priority. And this is what happens is many of the countries that is actually doing very well in the GFSI.
Doctor, we need to look at some of the major trends regarding food security and management. If we can pull up this particular graphic that shows major trends shaping our national food security strategies, walk through us with this particular slide, Dr. Ais.
I think this is one of the most important slides that can be studied and must be implemented as quickly as possible. And these are the 10 trends that we decipher from all the countries that are doing extremely well in the GFSI. I'm not just looking at the Netherlands, I'm not just looking at the Scandinavian countries, I'm not just looking at a country that has huge land base like US or India. I'm also looking at Singapore, and Singapore has hardly any land, but they are doing extremely well in this area. Let's look at the first trend, distinctive national food security strategy. As an ecosystem of dedicated government. You see, the thing is that national food security must be marked as national security. This is very, very important. Many countries have done extremely well in this area, has done that. Singapore has done that. Netherlands have done that. Many other countries who rank high. And it is very, very critical, because if we have many government agencies who are looking at the food security across all vertical. It is not just the purview of Agriculture Ministry and food security. It has the Economy Ministry, it has the Prime Minister's Department, there's MOSTI, the Science and Technology Innovation. There are many other ministries, the Ministry of Transportation who looks after the transportation part of it. Many other, so it is really a collective effort by the entire ministry, and that's why it has to be now in Malaysia. We do not have a specific food security agency, for instance. So I think it is time for us to do that, to establish a new food security agency consistent with most of the other countries who's doing well. Now, looking at other actions towards food self-sufficiency, when you talk about efforts towards food sufficiency, we are not looking about food sovereignty. That is not possible to achieve. But spearheading the effort towards food self-sufficiency, we need to identify what are the food or the products or the produce, the agri-produce that is critical for us in the context of Malaysia. I think the SSR, the pie chart just now you showed, takes care of most of it. The next one is heavy investment in agri-tech research and development. Countries who have done well, Netherlands, you name it, the Scandinavian countries, even in Singapore, they are investing big time in agri-tech research and development. Are we doing the same? What is the budget that we have allocated for, say, for instance, Mardi? If I'm not mistaken, it's about 20 to 30 million ringgit annually. That's hardly sufficient for a good agri-tech research and development. The next is the particular focus on smallholder farmers. We tend to try to focus on, during the pandemic, we realized the big farms and so on have started clamping down on this operation and therefore shortages of food. Why? Because with the MCOs and this and that, they can't. But the small farmers are the one who's contributing. In many other countries where they are doing extremely well, when the focus is on the smallholder farmers, the country becomes very ranked very high in the global food security index. Coming to building vibrant, healthy ecosystem around the agriculture sector, that's important. So if you look one by one, let's look at the trend number 8, making agri sexy for the youth again. Traditionally, it is seen as the what difficult, dirty and this and that. But with advent of 4IR and so on, we can make agri really, really sexy for the youth. And the youth has to be brought into, because now in Malaysia, we have another problem, a big problem of aging farmers. And these farmers are getting old and they are not, the younger children are not really going into the farming. So this is a big problem. So how do you attract them? That means you need to repackage agri. Let's take Chile, for instance. For about 3.5 months harvest, you can get about 32,000 ringgit net profit. This is way above any average month or monthly income for any youth who will occupy wearing a tie, a nice tie like yours, Ibrahim, in the office. So I think it is time for us to look at it carefully. And we also have the trend number 10. One of the ranks or ranking that we have did very poorly is the water. And that is, our water is not being managed properly. We have very sick and biologically dead rivers, which is not good for the country. So I think if we can adopt these 10 trends as the going forward trend for us, again, we don't need to reinvent the wheel. They are already there. They are not hugely expensive. You don't have to bring in McKinsey and all that to reinvent the wheel. It's already there. Now, I think for Malaysia, we have so many agencies. Just as a sporadic look at it, we probably have more than 30, 40 agencies. But how to bring these 30, 40 agencies to work together towards a common goal? I think that is the most critical thing. It's unfortunate that many of them are working in silos, and this is a problem of bureaucracy and so on and so forth. So we need to break down all this.
Dr. Raiz, does this mean that, say, for instance, it can no longer sit within ministries and you need to get, say, for instance, the Prime Minister to instruct and all these agencies fall within the Prime Minister's department? What does it take for that to happen?
My MA research view is that when we really studied each of the line of this food security spectrum, we found it cannot be just agriculture. Agriculture is just one portion of the entire supply chain. So I think it has to be an integrated approach. And for that, it has to come under the Prime Minister's department or at least the Ministry of Economy, where they look at the entire spectrum and realm of agriculture from farm to the table. And I think this is very important for us to tectonically change our mindset. We can't say agri, just agri. No, you just have to look at the entire ecosystem. It is encompassing, it's a holistic. So our approach has to be also holistic. It cannot be in silos anymore.
All right, let's look at the suggested 3U solution that MA Research is proposing right now. If you can bring up the graphic. Basically, the first idea is to look at identifying unutilized wakaf land, identifying unemployed or underemployed, and the third is to identify ultimate priority food items. Dr. Raiz, walk through us with this.
Okay, this is just an example how we can realistically solve the problem, the three U's, right? Unutilized, underutilized, for instance, the Wakaf land. We have a lot of Wakaf land from Perlis to Sabah, and this land is not being productively employed. So what we are suggesting is that look at the 20,000 hectares, for instance, in Perak, or the 10,000, I mean, the hectares and hectares of land that has not been, these are the statistics. Again, for Perak and Johor, we have it, because, again, one of the challenges that we face here is that it's not easy to get data. So we try to get the data as much as possible from the published sites and so on. So look, as it stands, about 30,000, I think it is understated, but Perak, let's example, 20,225 hectares of land. Guess what? This is from Yayasan Wakaf Malaysia. Guess what? If this land can be used to, for instance, introduce a scheme where ASNAF, the people who are receiving zakat now, to start doing the agricultural effort, let's take the chili plantation with the fertigation system and so on. And sooner or later, they will be able to harvest enough chili and supply enough to the marketplace, and they will be able to contribute to the zakat. So these are the things that we can do. This is that is on the unutilized part of the land. If you look at the resources, the second component, we have about 1.2 million underemployed. That means those who have economics degree and have, but unfortunately, washing card.
The often quoted B40 is no longer B40. If you look at Prof. Jomo Sundaram's write-up,
he's
research, talking about B70. Because of the global pandemic and global economic situation, many of those in M40 has gone down to the B70, so to speak. So how can we
can utilize these unemployed and underemployed people for this particular agriculture? And the third component is that identify the priority, ultimate priority food items. What is the ultimate priority? These are the things, the food that you cannot go without. I think we all agree that without chili, we will have trouble. We all agree that cabbage, potatoes, ginger, these are all part and parcel of our ingredient for our food item. So if we take on a very simplistic, low-level, immediate, low-hanging fruit, these are the things that can be done. But it can be done, as I said, you cannot work in silos no longer. You cannot say that one agency under one ministry works like this and this. We need to have an integrated approach. Look at Singapore. There's something called food security agency, and they have the entire spectrum of it, and because of that, things gets moving. And guess what? Singapore, remember, they have very small little piece of land, and their strategies is three. Number one, urban farming, which contributes about 2% of their requirement. Number two, contract farming. They go to Batam Island, or they go to Vietnam or some other place, get a land for 25 years, 30 years, and then start, and then for the re-export. And number three, they have AI-enabled procurement system, which will ensure at any given time, cabbage or chili or tomato, Malaysia can experience some shortages. They cannot, because they have 171 different suppliers at any given time who can supply within 24 hours to 48 hours.
How is it being done in Singapore, Doctor? Is it through, say, for instance, the item that you mentioned just now, it sits under the PMO?
It is under agency by itself, which integrates all the other, like, for instance, they deal with the land, for instance, whether there is land available or there's empty building, a building is vacant. Remember, now we have vertical farming. So they become the one-stop center for anything, everything about food security. Remember, they didn't use the agriculture. They use food security agency, so like, or food safety agency. Likewise, Malaysia, it is high time, really, really high time to have a Malaysian food security agency that takes care the entire spectrum. Now, then the debate will be where it should be located. My own personal view is that, or MA Research's view is that, it has to be in a ministry that across all verticals. It cannot be one area. Then the element of territories and this and that. So ideally, it's either the Ministry of Economy, which you can create a food security agency under that, or to give importance. I think the importance must be there because food security is going to be a big issue globally in the next few months, years to come. Should come under the Prime Minister's office itself. And again, the model is that it has to employ the model of input, output, outcome, impact model. It cannot be somebody yang just give the food security agency, give them the budget and spend the budget at will. No, it must have very specific outcome and impact that comes along with the budget has been allocated. And hopefully, they can be self-funding eventually. So I think the models are available. It is not available. We do not want, again, a creation of another agency and a creation of another territories to protect and turf war to do. We do not want that. We need a Malaysian food security agency that will across all verticals, and ideally speaking, it should be parked under either the Prime Minister's office or Ministry of Economy. Again,
they should be within, say, for instance, the Ministry of Agriculture, because that's exactly what people think it is right now, where agriculture creates food, therefore it's more natural to be put in under the ministry, that ministry.
You see, that's the traditional thought process because, as I said from the beginning, agriculture is only one small subset or component of the entire spectrum. So we need to put it under a ministry that will make sure that all the spectrum is taken care of. And this I can see only either under the Prime Minister's office or either under Ministry of Economy. Because Ministry of Economy can cut across, just like, for instance, the Malaysian Digital Economic, MDEC. It's now parked under the Communication and Multimedia or Digital. But ideally speaking, it should be parked under Ministry of Economy. That's the way that I think, because it cuts across. Digital Economy cuts across all verticals. Likewise, Food security cuts across all verticals. If you put in one, then there will be a lot of territorial issues that needed to be addressed. And this is a real issue that Malaysia is facing. And we cannot afford to continue doing that.
Thank you very much, Dr. Raes, for sharing your thoughts and sharing MA Research's view on food security. That was Datuk Dr. Raes Hussein, the President and CEO of MA Research. You can find out more about this on the MA Research website. Also, find out more about these items on astroawani.com. My name is Ibrahim Sani. Have a great Monday. Have a great week ahead.